Welcome to Wellness Renaissance and Gluten-Free and Other Special Diets podcast, supporting you on your unique journey to finding your best health.
Hello again, this is Judy and I have Joel with me today.
Hello.
Hello. We are changing up the format a little bit for the show. We're trying something a little bit different. Basically, we're looking at pulling little tidbits of information out of the news or things we've heard or that kind of stuff that are kind of related to health in various ways. So that doesn't mean we're changing everything. Like, it's not like we're doing going to not do interviews or various other things. It is simply a variety show, I guess you could say.
Adding something in new so we have more things to talk about.
Yeah, and it's fun. I like to explore.
Right.
You and I like to explore some of these concepts and take these little, you know, 2-second sound bites of information and drag them out forever, hopefully in a positive way. I guess we'll find out, right?
Yep.
So going forward in this particular show, we're going to talk about roller coasters and kidney stones and why going to the amusement park might be good for you. And we're going to talk about babies and Google snacks.
Cool.
So for anybody who has been to the hospital or in particular had a baby, you know that you get the bill and there's a ton of little different charges for a ton of different things. But imagine looking at your bill and seeing one charge for $40 approximately for the hospital to take your newborn child and put it on to the mother or to allow the mother to hold the baby. So in Utah, there was a Utah couple that were charged for exactly that thing. $39.35 was charged to cover the extra staff to securely put the babies in the arms of the mother.
Well, and I think if I remember, the thing that jumped at me was the skin-to-skin contact option.
Yes.
And it's like, my mind goes in so many different ways with this. With my background in billing, I worked in the fraud and waste division of health insurance. So my mind instantly goes to, this sounds like overbilling, because it's supposed to wrap into the same cost. But on a moral level, I can't believe that they would try to do that.
Right. It's like, this is what we want every mother to do. This is what they need.
And what extra staff do you need?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, well, yeah, if you don't have somebody that can do that, you probably don't have enough people helping the mother give birth in a hospital setting.
Agreed.
So, yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a really wild thing. I'd love to know, and to be honest, I haven't done a lot of additional research to see what in the world happened with this. Like, was it reversed?
Mm. Well, right.
But the fact that it was even a thing in the first place, it's, wow. You know, the only way you could get away with this is if you said to some, you know, brand new intern and said, okay, bill for everything, no matter what happens, every move you see. And they're like, oh, baby went from there to there. Okay, well, that's, you know, $39, I guess.
But this all happens from charts. The billing all happens from charts and doctor's reports.
Right.
So somebody in that process had to tick the box that said, yep, we put the mother in the baby in the mother's arms, so there's the charge for that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So one of the other ways my brain is functioning here is I'm hoping that it was probably a hospital that was not a standard hospital, like it was a birthing center or something like that. Because a hospital billing, it's so universal to bill for the entire birthing process as one charge. It's an all-inclusive charge. It's a ridiculously high all-inclusive charge.
Right.
But they pretty much have a code that says this birth, normal, however it was delivered, and that's a charge. It's per diem. It groups all of the charges into one amount. So the very fact that it was broken out,
it would blow my mind, I guess, in some ways, if it was a birthing center too, because the focus on that, this is just part of what you do.
Totally. Yeah, that's my mind kind of falls apart on that, because if it was a birthing center, they wouldn't, as far as their mission, try to do that. But if it was a hospital, they can't. go that way. Again, unless the couple didn't have health insurance at all, or weren't covered by anything. But even so, I would assume all the systems are still set up to group that all into the same.
Would there be a code? Like, is that a code that you'd find in your list of codes?
Not that I'm aware of. I've never heard of that before. It just astounded me. Again, it wouldn't blow my mind if you saw in the medical record that the couple was asked whether they wanted skin-to-skin contact with an infant after it was born, and they said yes, so we did this. You know, that I'm totally would expect to see in a medical report, possibly.
Well, and so I think of that the complete opposite way, because that, to me, that's just what you should do. If the only note that should be made is, we asked the mom if she wanted skin-to-skin contact. She said no. Like,
human services.
That's the record. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's noteworthy. The fact that if they don't want it, that's concerning. It's just part of the process. It's exactly what you want to happen. I don't know. I should probably go research this more, and maybe should have before we did this. But it was just
it's more fun to be outraged.
But it just blew my mind because of that. Yeah, I was just like, whoa, wait a minute, what are we doing here? And yeah, it would be an interesting thing to know, like, what was the fallout from that? But my gosh, I mean, I have looked at hospital records, and it's the weirdness of some of the things that they bill for in general that you're like, huh, okay, I guess.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
It's weird that was noteworthy.
Well, wow. I don't know. And that's part of the reason they started grouping this, because you don't want to pick apart a birth. You want it to just happen.
Right. Well, right. Kind of rude. I know, clearly, it affected these parents. I mean, I don't know how the news story got to the Week magazine, you know, besides the Week pulled it out from another magazine or another news source.
Well,
but it's,
and it's very possible the parents went to the news media, and the news media said, ooh, that sounds like a fun story.
Right.
That'll piss people off. Which
obviously
does.
Well, it is, right. And it is just the blow your mindness of $40 to hold your child. Like, again, I didn't even think that was an option. Like,
no, that it wasn't, that it wouldn't happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know.
No, and again, it's only $40 when it's usually thousands for a delivery, but still, it's the fact that it was a call out.
It's just, it's the wrong thing to mention.
It seems to be backwards, yes.
It's just, you just call that part of the deal and go forward. Yeah. So I saw this and was like, whoa, this is the wrong direction for our healthcare system to be going.
Totally agreed.
Our friend Google has assisted us once again with questions.
Which is not to say we're going to always have follow-ups to every single thing we do, but
it
warrants,
you know,
in these two cases.
A good learning thing that you think, hey, I covered that. No, wait, I didn't. I have more questions.
Yep.
I don't know, but yes. So
dear listener, we will eventually learn how to edit and do these right in the podcast.
Bear with us as we come out of our infancy. Okay, so one of the questions that I asked seconds ago was the concept of this charge, and was it a C-section? At least I think I asked that question. The answer is that it was a C-section. Right on the bill, it says skin to skin after C-section. Now, I still personally do not really think that this should still be called out as a thing, because to me, it's kind of like birthing baby. That's the goal, is to get baby to mom. Like, there's just so many benefits to having instant skin to skin contact. So that's just the goal.
There's never, C-sections don't involve putting women out anymore, do they? In most cases.
I think in most cases that's true. And right. So, but what I was going to say is, at least with a C-section, I understand there is a little more work. It's not quite as simple. You've got typically, and I think in the pictures of the mom in this picture, in this thing, mom is draped, right? Totally. So from her neck down, she's got a wall above her. So there is a little bit more effort and work required to get this to the,
gotcha,
to get the baby to her. So, okay. On one hand, I can at least make more sense of this, nonetheless, again, I still think it's a sort of sad thing to see on your bill. And the parents, they took it with pretty, they thought it was kind of funny, actually, and took it pretty well. And they had said their whole experience with this hospital was really, really good. So they weren't like, it wasn't an anger thing. It wasn't like, you know what I mean? Just one more to make us frustrated. It was a fine experience. And that's probably why they took it as well as they did. Because I could see that some people could go, whoa, wait a minute. But the guy, just to add in some fun pieces of this, the guy started a GoFundMe campaign to pay the $39.35. Which he got covered. So it took seven people within 10 hours of posting up the account to reach his goal.
It took 10 hours to fund $40?
I know.
That's $4 an hour, dude. That's not very good.
He said that the money that he reached after reaching the goal, or the money he got after reaching the goal, he said he was going to take that money and put it towards a vasectomy because he said, quote, I never want to go through these sleepless new baby nights again.
Yeah, dude, wait a few months, make sure that's your right decision, but totally understand to some extent.
So anyway, that explains a little more of it. Again, it's a little bit of a weird and sort of a sad charge, but it's interesting. So. So if you're looking for some alternative medicine, there was a story about researchers at Michigan State, and sadly they didn't talk about how they did this research, because I'm kind of curious. It would be a fun research study to be part of. They found that if you need to pass small kidney stones, a potential way of doing this is to sit in the back of a roller coaster where it's most, you know, so on a roller coaster is good in general, but in the back, it's more of a topsy-turvy, shaky kind of experience in the back car, but that it can help you pass kidney stones.
That is just awesome. Yeah, I still want to know the research prospectus or whatever that they had to write up to get that going.
Exactly. Well, and it's a fascinating thing, because if you think about it, I'm just thinking back to before current times, like, you know, did you not know you had a kidney stone? You had a pain one day and you rode your horse for a day and then you were like, fine, you know, I'm just curious about that. So, you know, hey, if you're miserable from kidney stones and you've got a park nearby and you're waiting, I mean, why not? You know, if you dig roller coasters, what a great excuse to do that. I had a friend just recently who had a kidney stone, and
Steve
and Steve eventually he left the building. But of course, in Minnesota right now, it's very cold outside and there are no roller coasters running, so it wasn't even an option.
I was going to say, the entire therapeutic method goes out the window for Michigan in what, 6 months of the year.
Exactly.
But I've got to wonder if, like, a good massage chair, or if it's the shaking. I mean, it makes total sense that it just jostles whatever loose so it can pass through the tissue or, you know, vessel or whatever.
Right, yeah. And you're looking at, I'd have to go look at an anatomy book just to think about this better. But yeah, you're trying to get something through a tube to go all the way down. And if it kind of gets lodged or whatever, yeah, you are trying to shake it up. So I don't know, maybe go do some intense dancing, or, you know, there's a whole, what is it? There's a whole concept around, like, there's a better word for it than jumping, but kind of like you are literally jumping. I mean, I'm thinking of trampolines too, but I know there are people who do it meditatively where they're not fully leaving the ground, but they're just literally kind of bouncing. Maybe it's called bouncing. A hard word to find in my vocabulary today, apparently.
That's the word that came to my mind, but I thought it would be too simplistic.
Right. And I'll go with the simple. That's usually what doesn't find my brain, find its way out of my brain. But yeah, so I don't know. I was just thinking about that. Because, you know, I don't remember being a kid in a Johnny Jump Up, but I imagine, knowing me, that I loved it. And so I know kids don't get kidney stones, I suppose. But I'm thinking it's something that people do therapeutically. So I'm like, just saying, it's something to try if you have kidney stones that you want to pass.
That is cool. Or go horseback riding.
Yeah.
I've got to imagine it'd be a painful experience, however.
Well, I think they said the point was that this was painless. Did they say painless? I thought there was painless in here.
I don't think so. I think they said just an easier.
Oh, an easier way. Well, easier.
which again probably means pain reduced.
Well, and if you're spreading out the, if you're making it go faster,
right,
and you're not sitting on the roller coaster going ouch, 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 but it has potential. And I don't know if there'd be anything contraindicative for doing this. Like there'd be a bad
other than
idea.
Puking, but. For me, who hates roller coasters, this is not going to be a therapy I try.
It's not your method of getting rid of the, yeah.
But I've got to imagine, I'm imagining a massage chair in a doctor's office that has like a paint shaker connected to it. And it's got to be about the same thing without the falling thing of, you know, the roller coaster drop, unless the roller coaster drop, a slight weightlessness also helps with the movement.
I could see that it could. You're talking G-forces and then different
effects. Yeah, because the tissue would almost float for just an instant.
Right.
You know, the tissue in your body.
Right. Yeah. No, I could see that could be a benefit. I just agree with you that, and am curious to know if there's just a lot of other things that would help too. And I'm sure it comes down to, well, where is it stuck? How is it lodged? Whatever gets it out is the thing that works. So, but it's just an interesting thing to think about things that, okay, what else can we do? I mean, you think of moms who are trying to give birth, like, okay, well, I went and rode bike and I did this and I did this and I did this and come on, baby, let's go. You know, it's just kind of an additional piece of that. And if you're desperate and you don't have health insurance or you just want to make the process go faster.
For disclaimer purposes, we are not recommending that you go pregnant on roller coasters. just to cover your... Yes.
Talk to your doctor first before doing anything.
Goodness, I'm just having this vision of saying, "Well, Judy said on this podcast, if I want to get over being pregnant faster, yeah."
Things that they say are not directly meant for you to go do. Think about it first, please. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, and that, I mean, I know at some point we're gonna have a disclaimer put together, and maybe it's already happened in the beginning of the podcast, but
time travel in editing is a beautiful thing.
Well, just that, yeah, we're always expressing our thoughts on an issue. We're never giving advice.
Right.
And usually we're talking about stuff that's happened to us, though I've thankfully never had a kidney stone.
I neither. I'm pretty pleased about that.
Yeah.
From hearing the people who have, the closest thing I've had to it is gallstones, which I hear is kind of comparable. Mm. And I don't even sure what the heck gallstone-y issues I had except pain.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, so, I definitely remember that.
This does not sound like fun. And talking to my friend recently, she was pretty miserable for multiple days. And so, yeah. And I think her statement was exactly that. The pain pills and the roller coaster did not sound like a good combination.
Okay, I was going to ask if you talked to her about this article, because that just... Oh, she's saying from the perspective of puking?
I think so. I didn't get the total clarification, but but from the nausea that she was already kind of experiencing. So,
perhaps the pressure of, you know, vomiting like that would also put pressure on things and free stuff up.
Yeah, just sit by, definitely sit in the back of the car of the roller coaster.
And just sideways.
That way, yes, sideways, and make sure it's not a loop. Do not go on the corkscrew.
Understood.
So, all right. Well, good luck with everybody and their kidney stones and passing them with grace and ease. So, after all of the questions that we had after having our little discussion a few seconds ago, we took a few moments and we discovered there's this really neat thing now over the interwebs that's called Google. And if you search on Google, sometimes you can find stuff.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I rely on my job for, so I don't know why I didn't cross-connect it.
So, to add some pieces to this story about our little kidney stone passing, so I did a little bit of research because I was curious about learning a little bit more. The information that I had originally had came from a couple of different places, but it was pretty thin, so... I found some quote unquote thicker information. And basically, it looks like that an osteopathic urological surgeon was one of the people involved in this study. And what they did was that the inspiration for the study was because patients have come and said, "Hey, we've ridden roller coasters and we've passed kidney stones. And according to one of the things that I read, that there was a consistency, weirdly enough, with Walt Disney World's Thunder Mountain. That's not the only one, but that is where they did this study. And apparently that people have said that they have done that and passed multiple kidney stones. So, but they also talked about the guys who were inspired to do this, basically just said, you know, we listened to our patients and we were hearing what was working. And in the, one of the things they were mentioning other things like going over speed bumps, going in an elevator where you kind of jostle a little bit. Right. And the point being that depending on where the kidney stone is lodged, it needs to sometimes go up before it goes down.
Gotcha. So it is more, so in other words, my chair idea is probably not the therapy we're talking about, because I know Space Mountain isn't a jerky, or at least it's not a bumpy roller coaster. We used to have a roller coaster by where we used to live called, oh, what was it, White?
Oh, the white one?
The wooden roller coaster is what I always called it. But it was the really jerky, bumpy type, where Space Mountain I don't think is that. It's more a smooth, dropping, moving. So it is more moving your tissues around, not vibrating.
Right. I think, yeah. And so it's the, my guess is that, or from a combination of my guess and what they said, it's the whole idea that, yeah, you're going up and down. And so you kind of got the forces of, you get the stone and then you go up and it goes down and then you go down and it goes up. And then eventually it might pass through the tubes it needs to then pass out. And apparently if you look at how the kidney is designed, apparently when they did this test, like all of the ones in the top chamber, when they were stuck there, came out, and not always for the other chambers. So they aren't saying this is the end all be all. And one doctor was like, yeah, I don't think I'll be adding that to my therapy list. But they were kind of saying it's kind of a legit thing to do because it can work and it's not the only thing, but it has worked. And so, you know, take advantage of it, I guess, if you're, you know, you happen to be going out somewhere, it could happen. And what a great reason to go on a roller coaster if you like roller coasters. So
if you like roller coasters, yes.
So yeah, the one of the other things they were saying was that it's kind of in line with some of the non-surgical treatments that they have, where they said they've tried to suspend people and invert them and pound on their back and things like that. And they said larger stones might still need surgery, or they were even saying this might work if you have the treatment where they break it up, that this might then be able to take that out. But they were saying pretty small stones. So the stones they were saying is they thought if it was 4 millimeters, that you might have a good chance of passing it. And so some of the details of how they did the study, just to understand, because they didn't pull like a bunch of people together, sadly, who had kidney stones and take them all to Disney World, which would be pretty
cool. Aww.
They basically used a silicone model of a kidney, apparently made by a 3D printer, and they used actual kidney stones and actual urine and went on, you know, went through this ride, like, I don't know what they said, 20 times or 60 times or something like that. And they had Disney's permission and Al was well there. But yeah, so they didn't have people. So they were basically also saying, hey, look, everybody's body's a little different. This is an exact replica, but it's close as best we can come. So yeah, some more information. But the overall success rate was like 67%, over 60% of passing.
Wow.
So that's kind of fun.
That's significant.
Hey, one less trip to a doctor, a surgeon, or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a plus. This is a little story about Google Snacks and control, if you want to throw Janet Jackson into the mix a little bit.
And we're talking snacks at Google, not snacks made by Google.
Not Google snacks, like not okay. That you will see next to your Snickers, there's going to be a snack called Google. Oh. This is about snack bars at Google, okay. Because at Google, apparently you can have free snacks and drinks all day long.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So they did a study looking at the relationship to the distance of snack bars. And by bar, I mean a place for which snacks are held, not like a person selling them, obviously, because they're free. But the distance between, you know, somebody getting up to get a drink, a coffee, or something out of the fridge, and in relation to snacks. And the snacks that they're talking about are cookies, M&Ms, various other things. There were some healthy things like fruits and nuts, I think, in there too, but a lot of, you know, the typical snack stuff. So in the study, they're looking at if there is a spatial relationship to our snacks and how close they are in our choice to actually have a snack. So in this particular study at Google, where there are 400 employees, it's in New York, these folks have access to free snacks and free drinks in the Google offices all day.
Okay.
So basically, there are, imagine, two different mini kitchens, and apparently they have two entrances each. There is, in each mini kitchen, there's a beverage station with coffee and a refrigerator. And then there is also, in each station or mini kitchen, there is a snack bar that contains a bunch of different types of candy bars and cookies and crackers and apparently some fruit and some healthy stuff as well. The difference in these two locations is that one of the snack bars is 6.5 feet from the beverage station, and in the other one, it's 17.5 feet from the beverage station. So what they looked at was, if you go to each of these little kitchenettes, how many people actually take a snack after they go get their drink. So apparently, typically people are going there to get a drink and then they get a snack. So what they discovered was that 20% of people will get a snack when it's the near station. So when it's 6.5 feet away,
right,
then 20% of the people grab a snack. And when it's 17.5 feet away, then 12% of people get a snack. So basically, the fallout of all of this is, it's kind of amazing if you think about that. That's like, what, 2-3 extra steps?
Right. Yeah. I was trying to measure that by looking at the room I've got, and I've got a 6-foot piece of furniture that I know is 6 feet. So I'm like, okay, that's really close.
Right.
And essentially 3 times that, it's still not more than crossing a small room.
Right. It's not. And it's kind of amazing to think that that has that much of an effect. I mean, it certainly helps you understand why in all of our stores, we have snacks right next to us, because going around to the next aisle is too much work.
Gotcha.
And it's hidden typically by a cashier or a little wall. So that's, you know, that's helpful too.
Right. And not to make too much out of the statistics, because again, 8% is significant, I think, in studies. And there was a sub part of that that said that men were even, this applied more to women than it did to men.
Or, no, it had more of an impact on men than it did on women. They didn't explain what the impact was, but
right.
If I'm taking what they're saying is that men typically did that more than women.
Yeah, which can either mean that men go, it's not worth it, or men are just lazy. But, I mean, they didn't go into how much impact it had, so I think the global was more that the distance has such an impact on that.
Right, and kind of the takeaway is, you know, to stop yourself from snacking, don't have them in your face. Like, you know, make them a little bit of a ways away. And this is something I think if we examine for many people, if we examine our behavior, we can kind of see that. And this is why, let's take, I toured a school, Gustavus, in South Minnesota, and the dietitian there at the time that I toured, they basically, in efforts to get their students to eat more fruit and healthy foods, they put all the fruits and the vegetables in a much more accessible place. So when you walked around the corner as you were going to leave, you had this big mound of beautiful fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Right in your path. A few feet over was the rack of chips. So it wasn't like they put them behind anything or anything,
right.
But it made a huge difference on how much fruit people bought. It was the whole, they would grab a banana and then go, the chips are over there. I got a banana. When before, when it was flipped, it would be like, I got a bag of chips. I don't need a banana. So it really is about that kind of thing. I mean, people who are really working to help people eat healthy, these are the changes that they make to make the easy choice the healthy choice. I mean, this is a big deal in how things are set up. But I was thinking about this as I was reading this today. I was at one school looking for something quick to grab as a snack, and I ran across no fruit. And I wanted iced tea was what I really, I wanted liquid, and I didn't want to buy water. I had a water bottle. I knew I was going to get to a water fountain shortly, but I wanted an iced tea, and I wanted an unsweetened, no crazy anything, basic plain iced tea.
Right.
And I went into the store and I discovered they have taken out all of the iced teas. There's none left. And so that wasn't even a choice. And I knew that if I went into the little cafeteria, at least my experience was when I was frequenting there, is to get an iced tea in the afternoon, I had to ask somebody to turn on one particular beverage machine to get an iced tea. And I was like, I didn't have time for that. I need to get on to my next ride to go to the next school. Well, I went to the next school where I was facilitating a class, and I went into their little store, and they had plain iced tea. So I was very excited. And bananas and fruit right when I walked in the store.
Gotcha.
Which I just thought was interesting. And just the interesting looking at how things are different in two different places that I was at in one day.
Well, and it brings an interesting concept of, because essentially, I mean, I don't, wow, we could go flying off into the nether with this, but it's the difference between capitalism and public health.
Right.
Because there's less profit margin in the iced tea because there's less demand.
Right.
And so it doesn't make them as much money at the one concept that you're talking about, or the one location you're talking about. They know people don't buy it as much, so they don't place it in easy grasp. But again, if you flip that on its head for the Gustavish example, or for, you know, making the easy choice the good choice.
Well, and here's... go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I was kind of petering out of my thoughts. So,
it's an interesting thing, and this is sort of my, and I, being a public health major, feel like I can speak to this a little bit. and the school doesn't apologize for it, so I have no reason to. So Gustavus, and again, I haven't been there for a while, so I don't know what their economic structure is. They don't have to make a profit in their cafeteria.
Right.
That's not their goal. So their goal is to have healthy students. Their goal is to really support as best they can their students' well-being. So other things that came out of that when I toured were, for instance, they don't charge extra, at least didn't. Again, this was years ago. They didn't charge extra for, say, gluten-free bread. It was like, if you need the gluten-free bread, we're not going to punish you for that, right? And I can understand why people would upcharge. I don't want to, because it can be expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not totally complaining about that. I am, in this particular case, just calling out a difference and a mindset difference. But again, yeah, their goal was, we want our students to be healthy, so let's give them fruits and vegetables. Let's make that the easy choice. The school that I was at earlier today, yeah, to find fruit there sometimes, it is like it's on a sleuthing mission.
Right.
You know, and they only set a few out at a time, and they don't get very many. And so it's like, it was just always confusing that, yeah, you could not depend if you didn't hit the cafeteria. You couldn't, early enough in the day, you couldn't depend. You could get a piece of fruit, like a banana.
Right. Well, and who's to say, I mean, to somewhat give a little bit of forgiveness to the one school that you're talking about, we don't know if they've done a trial of where you put all of the good stuff close and then, you know, 10 extra feet and you've got all the crud food. And perhaps they discovered that for that market, it doesn't matter. So why put that extra traffic, so to speak?
Right. No, and that's, I will say, from conversations that I had with folks, the answer to that discussion from at least one person was, we don't have the space to do that. We don't have the space to make the healthy choice the easy choice. So I don't fully know if they...
It doesn't take that much space. They probably just haven't thought about it properly.
Right. Yet. It took thought. It takes the thought and effort, and who knows...
Right.
Yeah. It's just always amazing to me. And in general, so here's the other thing. It's also, and this is a discussion that I had with many people many times. You go to Gustavus and there's a bunch of fruit sitting there, right? There's not two bananas. There's a bunch of bananas.
Right.
Where you go to the other school and there is a few bananas, for which many people had talked about the weirdness of not taking that because you somehow feel bad if you're taking the last one or the last couple. And so you feel like it's not plentiful, but the bags of chips are plentiful. And though it's a really weird reason, you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. I don't. It's kind of... my philosophy mind is kind of balking because that would mean that they're just more expensive and they're more in demand so that they would disappear faster. But you combine that with Midwestern nice, And you have this weird dynamic that I totally see what you're saying.
Right.
Is, yeah, if there's two bananas left, you don't want to take that because it, especially in that, in the school setting where it's, you're socially feeling like it's, you're trying to fit in so much anyways, that you don't want to be taking the limited resource.
Well, and if you just use the bunny brain inside, it says, well, there's two bananas left and there's 17 bags of chips. I'll just have the bag of chips. You know, so somehow there's only two of those left. There's a bunch of that left. It makes it an easy decision to go, well, I'll just take that. There's more of that. So I don't know. It's a complex conversation that, again, we could go all over the board with, because this is something that was talked about and looked at a lot while I was in school, while I was doing my internship, while we were just in classes related to public health, and sometimes just related to discussion. Yeah.
Now, it does speak to the interest, though. Okay, so just to give that other place a little credence, the most centrally located thing was a healthy choice, or healthier choice, in one of their other cafeterias. So whether that was happenstance or whether that was by design, I mean, there's only so much you can do with kitchens. They wouldn't rearrange their, because I think they had a pizza station. They wouldn't be able to move that because we're talking ovens and all that
stuff. And that was a choice that one of the directors did make. And whether that was made because it was the most convenient place or whatever, you're right. It was kind of the most central. It is kind of the most central place, and that was a very good choice. And in that respect, yes, I would agree that that was a good that was a good shift, for sure. So yes.
Yeah, we're not trying to bad play the place. We're just trying to, and that's probably why we're both being careful to not mention.
Well, it's a it's a complex discussion with a lot of different things that come into play, but it is sometimes it is the interesting thing that people who are in that real mindset of we want to serve the students and their health did walk through the cafeteria and the place and went, wait a minute, why is this so hard to find? What's going on here? And so it is about a little bit about a mindset. It's about a lot of things. I mean, in the reality too, these people are trying to, you know, my school is a for-profit cafeteria. They have to have a profit. So they are looking at it from that perspective, at least somewhat. If they weren't, it would look different. There's just no way around that.
Yeah. Well, and that is the hard part of not spinning off into capitalism or socialism. It's like, that's just driving me to go that direction of what do we, because we classify primary and secondary education, you know, through 12th grade as kind of a socialist thing. We're controlling the kids' behavior for their better thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, sometimes in high school, sometimes in college, you flip that dynamic and it's probably getting more, I'm probably out of touch because it's probably going farther down the food chain, so to speak, to the lower grades of for-profit cafeterias in, you know, elementary schools. But you flip that on its head and say, okay, now just do whatever's the best, or do whatever you want, i.e. capitalism, without a fairly lengthy mind switch to people to say, yeah, and the stuff you want that is bad for you is the easiest to get and the most profitable.
Well, and the reason stated for that is, well, that's what people want. And there's truth to that, but it is a complex. I cannot think of the name of the book because I read. Okay, so I just took a minute to find the book that I was looking for. The book is called Nudge: Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness, and it is by Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. I think is how you pronounce his last name.
Gotcha.
And libertarian paternalism is the whole concept around just putting things in the way to help people make better choices. So you're not taking away the chips as an option, you're not taking away things or whatever, but you are saying, here, you should be eating bananas and kale. So here's some bananas and kale. And if you want the chips, they're over there. But if you're, they're 17 and a half feet away.
Gotcha. So they are talking in favor of that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And the book is, in and of itself, the book is really interesting. It goes into a lot of different stuff, but this is one topic that it really hit on that I thought made a lot of really great sense. And I was seeing, when I read the book, I was seeing and touring some places and doing some research where I was seeing this in action, where this isn't why they were doing it. It wasn't like they read the book and said, let's do this. They did it because it just seemed logical, and they were seeing results.
Yeah, well, it's back to the Gustavus discussion where, yeah, it's just putting it a little farther away.
Right. And you know, yeah, and not necessarily, again, horribly farther, just, well, this is where we're putting this now, whatever. They just flipped things, so.
Right. Well, and kind of to, to counterpoint the, or one of the points that came up before the book thought that you had too, as well, is the whole, the relying on the it's what people want argument. Mm-hmm. They're not going to lose so much profit margin. Well, there, maybe there is a case to be made that they would by placing it, but what people want is so influenced by so many factors.
Right.
That it's, I mean, the Google, the entire reason that started this conversation is the Google study saying, now if you just put them 10 extra feet away, mm-hmm. you'll make better choices. Be that out of time to reconsider, laziness, whatever that is the cause of that. Mm-hmm. So if you flip that on its head, putting it right next to everybody because it's what people want mm-hmm. is kind of a, it's kind of a misthought of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you really do is preloading them to make the more profitable for you choices.
Right.
And then saying, well, but it's what they wanted.
Right. Right.
And it's like, no, no, you're taking a result and causing it the and labeling it a cause.
Right, exactly. And utilizing it to your benefit, and then you just get to put right. a pretty excuse on it that says, well, it's their fault. And yep. And this was something that came up, I mean, again, in discussions and some of the stuff that I did of exactly that. And there were a lot of students who were like, well, no, really, that's not what I want. And some students were going, yeah, it's what I want. I want pizza and hamburger every day because I don't live with my mom anymore. And that's what I want. Is that what I right. should be doing? No, that is not what I should be doing. But right. you make it really easy and I make the stupid choice. I mean, and there were students that kind of just straight out said that. Like, they totally acknowledged the reality of their situation. And I think that, yeah, it is understanding your own mind to know I should be having this, but yeah, I'm going to have this because it's right here and it's beautiful. It's a hamburger. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and if you go back to brain chemistry again, it's a question of where do we stop being paternalistic to people? You know, we used to say until they're out of high school, it's okay to be paternalistic and right. controlling because you're doing it for their own good. Well, we know from brain chemistry that we are talking 25 is when you actually have an adult brain.
Right. And yeah, so the excuse and the reason, whatever you want to call it there, is, well, they're adults. And then you go learn in class and you realize, no, that's not the case. And the other thing, you're also basically saying, hey, you could have the kale salad, or let me give you some drugs that are designed and put in M&Ms and in hamburger buns, etc., that make you want this. It's food designed to make you want it. So it's kind of just, again, it's the challenge of having education around some of that stuff and really understanding what's going on and looking at it from that perspective. I wasn't looking at it from a profit perspective. That wasn't my job, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it is a big topic and it's a big deal and it's really fascinating to see how our brains work and how easy when something is to grab, you know, this is why when you're sitting at the dinner table on a big family thing, it's like, get that, you know, how many times don't you hear, get this away from me so I can't reach it. You could still right. get up and walk 6 feet over, but you don't.
Or ask somebody to.
Right,
it.
Yeah.
And they would very much grab, still give it to you. Yeah. Well, the office that I work in, my home office, I was thinking through this entire discussion, is the same concept. I got a mini fridge so that I could keep vegetables really close at hand, because it's within arm's reach. Mm-hmm. I literally spin my chair around and I've got a fridge. And over time, it's become stocked with just food mm-hmm. versus healthy food. Mm-hmm. So now it's flipping around getting just a choice of food versus turning around and getting cauliflower, mm-hmm. which was the original purpose of
right.
it. And that really has shifted. It used to be very much I had that intrinsic intelligence at some point mm-hmm. to say, put the good for you choices within arm's reach and put the bad for you choices out of reach.
Right.
So that they were still possible, but I had to work for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, and yeah,
it's something that I think everybody can kind of think through on their own thing and see what it, just to know that it doesn't have to be, you don't have to put it down the street
right.
to get it out of your awareness.
Right.
If you put it 20 feet, the human nature will take over and change your behavior subtly.
Or the back of the cupboard or whatever. Yeah. And I don't want to get into this as a topic because it can be a different topic at a different time, but it is it's kind of the slight flip of that. So some of the discussions that I have with some of the people in my pre-diabetes prevention classes, we talk about tracking food and people track food. And one of the conversations that happens a lot is, Yeah, I didn't want to write that write down that I ate X, so I didn't eat X. So it
Yep.
works in multiple ways for us, and it just really is to acknowledge that and think about how we can sort of trick ourselves to do the right thing
Right.
too, and to pull it back to the actual Google study. So one of the comments that was made about this whole concept of grabbing the extra snack is to think about if somebody, say, gets three beverages a day. Now, again, they didn't go into the details of did they get a snack every time, blah, 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 but you're increasing your chances, right? So if you're constantly going to get a snack or a beverage, I mean, say three times a day or however many times a day, and you more often grab those snacks because they're easy, what does that equal to how many calories you're having, how much unhealthy food you're having? And they also didn't separate out how many pieces of fruit people were having. So one could argue that if you wanted to look at this more specifically, it would be fun to do, less ideal food and then fruits and vegetables and really look at that too. Like that would be a fun study to do. And I'd love to play with where you put the fruits and the veg and then where you put with the snack, the other snacks. But the point being is that over time,
At some point, those Google people would figure out
I
they're
know,
messing
right?
with them.
Well, I think they actually hired people to come in and do this whole process. So I think they hired psychologists to come in or psych somebody's. But the point being is that over time, that's a lot of calories over the year. So, it is just, it's a potentially a simple tool. Does it work every single time? No, it doesn't work every single time. But it can work, and can we take it? We're just trying to find ways to take advantage of anything we can to eat a little healthy or to eat a little less unhealthy, basically.
Makes sense.
Thank you, as always, for listening. If you have comments or feedback about this new format that we're working out, definitely feel free to get a hold of us, email, whatever. Let us know what you think or ideas that you have. You could definitely visit us on the web at wellnessren.com or facebook.com/wellnessren. If you enjoy the show, please go over to iTunes and search under podcasts for Wellness Renaissance Podcasts and write us a review. If you're not sure if you enjoy the show or not, well, maybe hold off a couple weeks before going and doing that. That would be nice.
Appreciate that, yes.
Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
See you.